You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. It's so good to be back. The Radio Cafe has been on break for the last few months, and during this time, we've brought on board some sponsors who are supporting this new season of the program. You'll be hearing from them during this new year. We're grateful for their support and so happy to be back with you, dear listeners. Thanks for tuning back in. It's a new year and a new government in New Mexico, and in a moment we'll be hearing from Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales. But first, this word from our sponsor. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation strengthens education in northern New Mexico so that learners of all ages can reach their full potential. Offering grants that fund public education and community projects, building resilient children, families, and communities through early childhood programs, providing K-12 wraparound services for students and teachers with Inquiry Science as the flagship initiative, investing in students' dreams through scholarships, and creating a solid foundation for learning and systemic change through partnership and advocacy. For program information or to give, visit lanlfoundation.org. Howie Morales was voted Lieutenant Governor of New Mexico last November alongside Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. For the last 10 years, he was in the New Mexico Senate representing District 28, the Silver City area where he was born and raised. I had the opportunity to talk to him around the first of the year. Welcome, Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales.
Thank you. So good to be here with you.
Great to be with you. Now, there are so many things to talk about. It's been 8 years of a Republican governor here in New Mexico. Now there's a Democratic regime in place. You have a background in education. You were a special ed teacher. You're an athlete and have been involved in all kinds of school athletics, student government. We're continually hearing about what's wrong with education in New Mexico, how we're number 49, we're number 50. What are the reasons for this? What are the deep reasons? How do we address them as a state?
I think one of the first things that needs to take place is that we really have to change the tone and change the messaging that has unfortunately hit every one of our school districts, our educators. And that message is that they're failures. And I believe strongly as an educator that those teachers, those educational assistants are doing all they can to help their students succeed. In the state of New Mexico, as was shown with the recent court ruling, that we have not sufficiently funded our schools. We haven't given the resources necessary to be successful. And when you had over the last 8 years, and I've been at the heart of those discussions and those debates, so much focus that has been placed on testing students rather than providing opportunities, what we see right now is just a disengagement of education.
And so we also have, I mean, when you say changing the narrative, I think one of the narratives that's just starting to be talked about is that we actually have a lot of strengths in this state that have really not been taken advantage of. What are some of our strengths?
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest strengths that we have is we have committed educators who have chosen to stay in the state of New Mexico. Despite all the things that we've had, the struggles that we've been dealing with, you have people who are working extremely hard to help our education system be successful. I believe in our diversity, in our culture. That alone is a strength that we can build upon, but we have to celebrate it. And we have to recognize that those are things that we have to focus on rather than taking away opportunities from our education system. When you look and also see the possibilities that we have within New Mexico, we have a chance right now to have a system that is created within our own state of having stakeholders involved to see what it is that we can make work. I think, unfortunately, over the last 8 years, we've been off of the narrative of what took place in Florida, and it was a failed model there, and it obviously has been a failed model here in the state of New Mexico. But fortunately, there's a new day in New Mexico.
What does all this mean in terms of actual policy?
I think one of the first things that needs to be done is there hasn't been too many policies that have been passed through statute over the last 8 years. A lot of it has been done through rule and basically bypassing the legislature. And you look at the education, the teacher evaluation system that has really plagued our schools and our educators. You look and see third grade retention, which was recently put into rule. That's going to be the first thing, is to reverse those rules that have been put in place that never passed the legislature. We need to make sure that if we're going to grade schools, that we do it in a way that's fair and that people can understand to use it as a tool for improvement rather as a tool for prosecution. And so those are some of the things that I see right off the bat what needs to be done as far as policy goes.
What about pre-K? And there's a lot of talk about that.
Absolutely. I think it all goes hand in hand. You know, we've always focused on K-12 and higher ed. But more recently, over the last 5 years, I've been proud to be part of the legislature, specifically in our finance committee, where we've really issued a lot more funding for early childhood education, giving that child the best opportunity possible at the most critical stages of their lives. And I think you're going to see more of that. I'm excited, and a piece of legislation that I've carried while I was in the Senate and now has continued to be carried forward is to develop a early learning department. We have a Department of Higher Ed, Department of Public Ed, but we don't have a department that focuses specifically on that early learning stages, and that's going to be critical, and I believe that it's going to be a real legacy piece by our Governor Lujan Grisham as we move forward.
Let's talk about energy. Do you have a vision, do you and the governor have a vision of a renewable energy path for New Mexico?
Absolutely, and we're primed for it. In the times that I had sat in the Senate, one thing that has really been difficult over the last 8 years was when we talked about developing the infrastructure necessary, whether it's wind, solar, or other opportunities that may be there, the discussion was always, we don't have the funding. And we're right. We didn't have the capital outlay funding that we needed. Now we do, and I think it's important that we invest right from the beginning on that infrastructure that'll give us the revenue streams that we need to be consistent throughout the years and not be so volatile on the oil and gas industry.
Because the oil and gas industry, every time the price of oil goes up or the price of oil goes down, that directly affects New Mexico's budget.
It absolutely does. And even now, you see how low the gas prices are. I mean, that's great at the pump, but it's not so good for a state that heavily relies on that revenue.
So when we talk about oil and gas revenue, I mean, that comes from the severance tax, royalties, property taxes, other, you know, income taxes, other sources. They go into the general fund, they go into the permanent fund. It's a significant part of our budget. We're also aware at this point that burning those very fossil fuels that fund us are also destroying the planet and having a real effect on New Mexico. How do you see, from a revenue point of view, bringing solar and wind into a place where they can provide equivalent revenue streams?
Absolutely, and that's something that we're both committed to. The governor is committed to that as well as I am, is to provide that funding stream that's there, but you've got to have the infrastructure in place. You've got to make sure that we have the systems in place that's going to give us that revenue 10 years from now, 20 years from now, so that way we're not as reliant as we've seen, unfortunately, in New Mexico. Seems to have always been.
But I mean, how would that work? Like a severance tax, you know, that's a tax on taking something out of the ground. Can you have a tax on taking something out of the sky or out of the wind?
Well, and you definitely see the opportunities that could be there because, again, it's generating energy. It's generating opportunities that New Mexico can benefit from that. So, yeah, there's the structures that could be in place very similar to what we have right now that we would benefit from that as a state. And when you look and see where our revenue streams are, it's very, very limited. So this gives us the opportunity to diversify our economy with those examples that you just gave. But obviously, there needs to be the pathway that can enter into the budget, and not only enter into the budget in the general revenue stream, but also enter into the budget where that can be something we can build on for years to come.
When you say setting up the infrastructure, what does that mean specifically?
I think anywhere from, I mean, there's, you just don't set up the opportunities like that without having the infrastructure the beneath the ground. What needs to take place as far as all the mechanics of how we can make this work. And so here's an opportunity that we can do that with this surplus that we have. But I've seen all too often in state government that when you have a big surplus like that, there's other projects that rightly so need to be funded, but we have to make it a priority to invest in the renewables. This is the time to do it. If we don't do it now, I'm not sure if we can ever get to that point.
Do you see that sector, the renewable sector, making up in dollar value the amount that's currently generated by oil and gas?
I'm not sure. That's still unknown. I do know that it could have the potential to bring significant amount of revenue in. And I think that that's key because, again, when you look at a revenue stream, we're not diversified. But if you have several revenue streams that can come in that can help alleviate the reliance on that one industry, yeah, I think that there could be several, not only talking about the wind or the solar, but we also have the recreational opportunities within our state. We also have the natural resources that can be utilized, whether it's tourism, whether it's looking at a hiking, a biking type of approach that could bring people in, for example. All of those add up to give us a revenue stream. We got to remember that we've traditionally been at a $6 billion budget in the state of New Mexico. That's going to be key that we can have that revenue in to keep that budget right in that area.
So we're talking about renewable, we're talking about recreation and tourism. What do you see as other pieces of building a stronger economy in New Mexico?
Well, I think that there's many potential opportunities that we have. Unfortunately, here in the state, what I've seen, especially over the last 8 years, is there's been kind of swing for the fences approach. Let's give away every tax break that we can give. Let's give away land. Let's give away water as incentives to bring companies in. And I think that we need to reverse that kind of thinking. We need to think from the inside out, meaning that let's help our small businesses. Let's help our areas that have been here in the state of New Mexico to be successful, to employ people at the local level. And I think when you focus in on the inside out approach, that you're going to start seeing that New Mexico is going to start benefiting and being attractive to industries from outside the state who may want to come in. But let's be realistic right now. How can we attract industries to come in when we have our high crime rate, when we don't have a behavioral health system infrastructure that's in place, when our education system has been struggling, as we've seen so much over these last few years, when you have child well-being in the place that it's been? We have to make sure that we can work from the inside out to address these type of things. Once we do that, the industries from the outside will see New Mexico as a viable option.
It's interesting that you say, I mean, industries coming in. I've heard stories about doctors who either decided not to move to state or who actually moved out because of the school system. They've got kids that are school age and they weren't really comfortable raising their kids here.
Yeah, and me being born and raised going through our public school systems here in New Mexico, I take great pride in what we can become and what we have. But we have to provide the resources there. So again, when you look at it from an economy standpoint, it's all connected. Child well-being, the importance of our state government being there as a resource is absolutely vital. And what we've seen right now is that we have such a high vacancy rate across our state. It's no wonder that our agencies are being impacted, which ultimately are impacting New Mexican families.
What do you mean by vacancy rate?
Right now, I think that it was the approach of the previous administration was to shrink government. And in reality, it wasn't that government was shrank or it wasn't coming in and cutting services. I really felt that we've amputated services that were been vital. You have people across the state who are doing the work of two or three people because those positions haven't been filled. You have to have a state government that's going to provide an infrastructure there for the basis of opportunities for industry, for business, and all other areas that you can think of.
It's funny, there's been so much anti-government rhetoric, and I think it's important to talk, even if it's in a philosophical way, about the importance of government itself. It's almost like it's like the skeleton around which the body can move and function.
We're not talking about growing government. We don't want to grow government to the point that it's excessive, but we do have to make sure that we can at least stabilize it to the point that it's providing services for people in our state, and that's not happening right now. When you look at our public health offices, for example, across the state, how those basically have such a need, yet the resources haven't been there. That's just one example of many. And I think that this is an opportunity that we have to help state government to work, to be a partner with business, to be a partner with our education system, to be partners with our opportunities for tourism. It all goes hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. And unfortunately, we've had to deal with that over the last few years.
We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales. We're going to take a little break. Please stay with us. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation invests in the dreams and futures of Northern New Mexico students through scholarships. Support is available for 4-year and 2-year degrees, as well as trade certifications. January 22, 2019 is the deadline to apply for four-year scholarships available to high school seniors and current undergraduates who are residents of the seven counties of northern New Mexico and meet additional criteria. Citizenship is not required. For more information and application details, visit lanlfoundation.org/scholarships. And now back to our program.
One of the things that has been kind of striking is how little conversation relative to other things there's been in the legislative sessions about water. Talk about water and how the new administration is planning for the water future of this state.
Absolutely. And there's still some legal battles that we're in right now. And when you look and see with the state of Texas and some things that are unresolved, there's a lot of question when it comes to water. I particularly feel strongly that we have to recognize the culture of who we are as a state, the farming, the ranching, the acequias, all these that tie into who we are as New Mexicans, and never forget about that. For example, in the area where I represented as a state senator, you had the Gila River, which right now is a bill that I had carried for many years, was to try to stop the diversion of that. One is the last free-flowing river, but two, we can better utilize dollars to have conservation-type approaches throughout the state of New Mexico. And I think that this isn't just an example of what needs to be done, but it needs to bring people together and having some kind of agreement. And one thing that I've learned in my time during the legislature is that getting agreement when it comes to water issues is extremely difficult because it's so precious.
Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting over.
We hear that often, and there's been a lot of fighting over it for the last few years.
Do you feel like there have been any kind of examples of how we can go forward without just fighting? But I mean, have there been any positive precedents in terms of water negotiations?
You know, I don't sit on the conservation committee when I was in the Senate. So I don't get a lot of those details. I see more on the funding side of it. But I think that there's examples out there. For example, the Gila diversion being a perfect example of what you can utilize dollars, taxpayer dollars, to really benefit multiple communities and to really help with the conservation piece of how we can protect our resource.
I remember when that Gila diversion, I mean, the idea that the Gila River, which as you said is the last free-flowing river in the state, it's undammed, it has tremendous wildlife and habitat implications and so on. And I remember when this whole diversion conversation started, my prediction was millions of dollars will be spent somewhere, somehow, and nothing will happen.
And you're exactly right. That's what has been happening right now. A lot of legal fees, a lot of attorneys being paid, but yet you haven't seen anything that's taken place. And again, this is just one example in the state of New Mexico how we can better utilize resources to protect our water and ultimately protect our families.
So you're from the Silver City area. You've represented District 28 for over a decade. You're talking about the Gila River. What are some of the other issues from that part of the state that you're concerned about?
We look and see, you talk about the oil and gas industry, as we talked a little while ago, very similar there, that being a copper mining community. My father was a copper miner. And you see that, again, the highs and lows of the copper prices really impact the community. I think that having that general revenue stream from a diversified approach, whether it's the wind, the solar, those type of things to help alleviate some of the pitfalls of the industries, I think that these are some opportunities there. What we also see is, and I saw it firsthand, is the impact when the governor passed a corporate tax cut. And it went from 7.4% to 5.9% to give relief to corporations. The burden that was placed on local communities across the state basically said, if you want that revenue back, you raise those taxes. Unfortunately, we've heard the rhetoric that this administration never raised any taxes. I believe it did worse. It forced taxes to be raised on local governments. So that's a real impact that's hurting our communities. Veterans, not only in the community where I serve, but all across the state, I see that there's issues that are impacting veterans and senior citizens because we're not providing the resources for those individuals that deserve it and that have earned that. And so very similar to what's happened in my old Senate district to what's happening across the state of New Mexico, they're strikingly similar issues all over.
Let's talk about immigration. What is the role of the state in enacting sensible immigration policy, given that a lot of immigration policy is actually federal.
And I know that it is federal, but I think that states can also be leaders, and they can really set the tone of what it is that we want to see in our state. We want to make sure that we do have a pathway to citizenship. We want to make sure that we have the approach that's going to provide the services necessary. I don't think that it's something in the tone that was sent that we send National Guard down to the border when there's other purposes that should be utilized with our National Guard. And fortunately, Governor Lujan Grisham has been very outspoken of that. The fortunate thing that we have in the state is her experience that she brings, being at the heart of that discussion there in Washington. She's going to bring that experience to make sure that we can have a state that sets a tone and really have a pathway that would the rest of the country can learn from.
I mean, one of the things that I think is not talked about enough is the reality of what's actually going on the border. I mean, we have so many fewer people coming in illegally than we did 20 years ago. That's rarely talked about. We have a worker shortage of jobs that are often filled by immigrant labor. I mean, what's the reality? You know, people say the immigration problem or the immigration crisis. What is the problem? What is the crisis? What's the reality? How do you see that?
You know, we went down there, myself and the governor, early on in the campaign, and we went down to the border ourselves. And what you hear and what you would think by seeing national coverage is that that there's a lot of crime going on, that it's a war zone, and just the opposite. Sunland Park being one of the least crime rates in the whole state really shows that it's opposite of what's being reported. This has become a political issue. This has been an issue that I think that the president had won his election on. But the reality of it is that there's a lot more that we can benefit from working hand in hand with our border countries than trying to divide them. And unfortunately, we've seen that this is the path that's been taken.
So do you have a sense of what really good comprehensive immigration reform would look like and how states can encourage that?
I think that, again, is when you have state government that could be working in all cylinders and being there as a resource, I think that's helpful. I know from personally speaking, my sister-in-law, who went through the process to get her citizenship to make sure that she did that legally, it was a real difficult process. It took a long time, a lot of money, and unfortunately, you have people who just can't do that, who want to go through that pathway. So the state can be a leader in helping to provide a pathway there. And as far as the comprehensive part of it, I'm very hopeful that the delegation that we have right now in Washington, specifically with the addition of Xochitl Torres Small there in Congressional District 2, who's lived the issues of immigration and issues of the border, is going to be a tremendous asset to guiding us of what we can do in New Mexico.
What are some other national issues that you think can be influenced by the policies and actions of states?
Well, I think that when you look and see the economy in New Mexico is always, it's kind of worked backwards, where in New Mexico, we were one of the last to come into the national recession, and we've been the last one to come out of the national recession. I think that by reversing that and being the leader of what we can do for our economy and really build from the inside out is going to be helpful. But I have to pivot back to education. Right now, the federal government, there's a real push that's trying to privatize education, that's really doing all it can to harm our public schools. New Mexico is going to send an example of that. We can rise from the 50th ranking to be second to none. And we can do that by having policies that have been developed within our own state to work for our people. I believe that the rest of the country is going to take notice of what it is that we're doing in New Mexico.
One of the things that we're witnessing now is how in Washington there's politics that are certainly more polarized than I've ever seen, and they've been polarized in a lot of ways for a very, very long time. But it's almost like there's no longer the concept of a loyal opposition. Republicans, both under Obama and Trump, seem to be attempting to exclude or even destroy the entire Democratic Party. And Democrats are always kind of bending over backwards to represent themselves as bipartisan. Republicans really aren't. I mean, you never see them saying, oh, let's be bipartisan about this. Paint a picture of New Mexico politics for us. How much is that kind of attitude trickling down? How much do we have working bipartisanship in this state?
working in the state Senate over the last 11 years, I was fortunate to be in that area because there was a lot of discussions, whether it was driver's license issue that was brought forward, other type of issues that were very controversial. We always were able to find some common ground with our Republican colleagues, and I think that that helped to move New Mexico forward. Unfortunately, is that what you've seen at the national level is that that hasn't taken place. And I mean, it was specifically stated anything they could do to help or to make Obama fail was the key. And I don't think that that's been the case here. When we had a governor who was a Republican and a legislature as a Democrat, there was really a lot of efforts to help us be successful to move things forward. The problem was is that you never had compromise that came in from the Republican administration. And I think that's where there was a lot of stalemate. I'm confident now as we move forward and seeing, I think New Mexico has really taken notice of what's happened at the federal government, not liking what's happening. And I think it showed maybe for the first time ever that we had every single statewide Democratic candidate win this last election because voters were fed up and they wanted to get out there and make their voice heard.
Let's talk about civil rights. We have issues regarding women's rights, and now, especially with the Supreme Court being what it is, nobody feels that Roe versus Wade is really absolutely secure. There's issues of LGBT rights, other groups that are threatened in New Mexico. What are your hopes and visions for strengthening civil rights in this state?
We can be a leader. I think that as other states move possibly in a different direction, New Mexico can be a leader to make sure that we represent the human race and having the opportunity to be there, whether it's discrimination that's taken place against women, against our different populations, we can do that and we'll stand strong. And I believe that under a governor leadership of Lujan Grisham, that we're going to see that we're going to take that step forward and really be a leader throughout our country. More than ever now, we need to have unity that takes place. And I'll continue to push for every single aspect of making sure that we respect all individuals as human beings. And I believe that we're going to see this shift here this coming session here in New Mexico that really takes a step forward to protect women's choice, to make sure that we can protect our dreamers and to protect individuals within our state that unfortunately have often, all too often, been persecuted.
One of the things that I really like about New Mexico is that there are so many Hispanic people, not only in the state, but in government. This is another way that New Mexico, I think, is kind of showing leadership. Michelle Lujan Grisham, first Democratic Hispanic woman governor. So talk about how New Mexico can provide leadership for Hispanic people, both immigrants and New Mexicans born and raised for generations, for centuries.
Absolutely. And it goes back to valuing who we are, never forgetting where we come from, and recognizing that our diversity is our strength. I'm so proud of the voters across the state of New Mexico and what they sent and that message to Washington. We have our first female Hispanic congressional district 2 representative in Xochitl Torres Small. We have Ben Ray Lujan there in Congress. That's the fourth highest leadership position, which is great for our state. And then for the first time ever, we elected a Native American congressional district representative from District 1 in Deb Holland. That's a great representation of who we are as a state, to make sure that each of those individuals are representing the different groups here in New Mexico.
So you are now lieutenant governor. What are actually the duties of the lieutenant governor besides sort of like vice president or something? You don't really necessarily hear much about them unless something happens to the governor. But what are your duties and what do you hope to accomplish in the office?
Really excited. I think that you take one is I'm fortunate to be working hand in hand with Governor Lujan Grisham. Traditionally, it's always been thought of that governors and lieutenant governors hadn't worked together very well or very often. We're going to see a change in this. And we showed that during the campaign that we are truly in this for the state of New Mexico and very supportive of each other. Some of the duties, obviously, is to preside over the state Senate, which I've done many times and excited to get in that role.
Because you've been in the Senate for so long.
Exactly. So that's something that I look forward to, but it's nothing new to me. I'm excited about having the office be there as an ambassador for the state of New Mexico. And whether it's going into a community and talking with our local schools or working across the borders to try to really increase trade opportunities here in New Mexico, those are kind of things that give the opportunity for Lieutenant Governor. But what excites me the most about that is the Lieutenant Governor's office is the state ombudsman, meaning being there to help out with people whenever they're having issues with state government, red tape. I've enjoyed that more than anything, and being a public servant is helping people. Now this office is going to focus on doing that, specifically focusing on veterans issues, senior citizens issues, individuals with disabilities, and then using it as a policy piece to assist our public education department.
Red tape is one of those issues that kind of never goes away. It's almost like the more you bureaucratize, it's hard to de-bureaucratize and yet keep the function of whatever agency you're talking about. What are your thoughts about that, about cutting red tape without actually cutting the integrity of whatever the agency is?
Absolutely. And it goes back to relationships, and it goes back to cooperation, communication, and collaboration, working hand in hand with those agencies that we find often that are either understaffed or just don't have the resources to help meet the needs of what the constituents are saying. That's going to be my role, is to create those relationships, to be an extension of that, to help, because ultimately we're a taxpayer-funded office, we're a taxpayer-funded government, and because of that, we need to make sure that our taxpayers feel that this is our government working for them. It goes all the way back to the customer service treatment that you receive. If you need to make a phone call to Tax and Rev, there's going to be somebody on the other line there to assist you. If you need some assistance at Motor Vehicle Department, that you're going to have a friendly person on the other side that's going to be there to help you out. This is something that's really important to New Mexicans, but all too often it just seems like it just has been forgotten. We want to make sure and change that approach and recognize that people matter in our state and they deserve to be treated as the people they are in New Mexico.
What would be the first, if you could just wave a magic wand, what would be the first policy change that you would make in this state?
The first policy change I think that needs to take place is one, is that, and the governor has been very, very open about that, is we want to reverse the educator teacher evaluation that has taken place. And the reason I say that is because everything revolves around our economy, and our economy is connected to education. When you don't have teachers in the school system because of a shortage, you are directly threatening that education system, and that's what's happening right now. We need to send the message that our educators are valued and they need to be evaluated in a fair way. So that's again is reversing one of those pieces of policies that never went through statute or through the legislature, but was enacted in it anyway. I think that's key. Waving a magic wand, I'm not so sure if, you know, changing policy is something which we'll look at, but also from day one, getting that message out as we've done, that New Mexicans are here, that we're working together, and that we're going to make sure that we are partners in moving New Mexico forward, rather than have the old approach of leadership that it's the leader on top of the hill pounding their chest in concurrence of others. That's not going to be the case. We're going to make sure we're working hand in hand with New Mexicans.
How can New Mexicans do their part?
Absolutely, and I think that's key, is ensuring that we can do our part to help every single local community. Again, working from the inside out, doing their part in the local areas, helping out, assisting, whether it's programs within your communities that can help build up our youth, whether it's things that can be done to assist throughout. We have a lot of professionals in the state, some that unfortunately have been driven out of practice or just out of opportunities, bringing those individuals back, whether they provide services from behavioral health to services that can be utilized in other areas. I want to make sure that New Mexicans know that we're open to working together with them.
Howie Morales is Lieutenant Governor of New Mexico. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.